Good. Well, I think it's about that time to start. We're up to 48 people. We actually have just shy of 250 pre-regged, but we only have an hour, so I'm going to kick the meeting off. Just a few housekeeping announcements. I'll start by, sorry, sharing. Hopefully, you will now all be seeing my screen share. We got that?
Yes.
Right. So, welcome to this session on consumer duty and using technology to demonstrate ongoing advice. A few bits of housekeeping to begin with and a bit of background too. My name is Ian McKenna from FTRC. I'll be chairing your session today. I will, in a moment, give you a bit of background to us. We have some great panelists joining today. We have just under 250 people pre-registered for this session. I'm pretty much sure that everyone is used to using Teams these days. If you're not, where have you been hiding for the last couple of years? Albeit our dear friends at Microsoft do change the functionality pretty much every week, if not every day. If I could ask, if you are not speaking, could you please mute yourself? If you we have typically in these meetings, we have a very active chat going on. So, this is an open discussion. We'll have Mike and Anya leading a lot of the discussion, but we really want to hear what you've got to say as well. So feel free to, if you want to raise a question, if you can click on the raise hand, or alternatively, put your question in the chat or any comments or any feedback. And I will, oh, Jesse, it appears the recording stopped.
Mine is still running. It must be someone
Okay.
external
Thank you.
trying to record.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Thank you. Yeah, please either raise your hand or put comments in the chat, put questions in the chat, and I will endeavor to come to you as we're going through the session. As I say, if you're not actually speaking, please mute yourself because you only need a couple of people to have open mics and we get their background noise and the meeting gets really quite difficult. And as I have said already, we are recording this session. There will be a transcript go up online, but for data protection reasons, we have to ask that nobody else records the session because you won't have got consent from all of the audience. As I say, my name's Ian McKenna from FTRC. The Consumer Duty Alliance technology sessions are very much designed to help those firms. When I was talking with Keith Richards about what we were going to do in terms of setting up the CDA Technology Forum, we really wanted to start produce something to help advisors who are maybe not as engaged with technology. We have a num there are a number of events that focus on those advisors that are engaged with technology. And we indeed run sessions ourselves. I'll brief you about in a minute that if you're already actively in embracing tech, get involved with those groups. If you're looking to learn, this is the group that we're putting together. Other resources that you can find for we have set up a site called advisorsoftware.com, which actually looks at all the emerging advice tech for advisors. We are currently tracking over 150 different advice tech solutions. So you can go and look at that site, see what the systems actually do. There's a wealth of information on that and other technology information. We have a global directory of suppliers. For those of you that are involved in protection, we also run a thing called Protection Guru, which is increasingly recognized as the leading technical site for life insurance advisors. There's something similar for Benefits Guru. We are, as Anya was kind enough to mention earlier, we are running an event in July. Many people are getting really excited about the potential for artificial intelligence. in the financial advice market, there is an event on the 10th of July in London. And there is indeed a special pricing for advisor members of the CDA. You'll get a link with the feedback forms on this session. We do have one thing we would have is we are running a technology survey, which we use to understand the preferences of advisor firms and how they're thinking about the future of their technology. And it will inform a lot of these sessions. There are over 100 firms that have already engaged with that. If your organization has not already responded, when you get your feedback form, you'll get a link through to that. It's been designed that people can complete it in under 15 minutes. You get a link to it, please do complete it. Maybe if you're having lunch after this session, you might want to complete it while you're going out having lunch. And the last thing I will, for those firms that are more advised, and Mike and Anya are both regular participants in our main advice tech forum, I think they would endorse that it's a really good environment amongst advisors for collaborating. There's an awful lot of shared learning that goes on. Our next advice tech forum is on the 22nd of May, and we'll explore digital relationship management, which I think is a really exciting new form of technology that I very much see as the future of advice tech. So for those of you that are actively engaging in leading edge systems, you know, please, you'll also get a registration link with that, with the feedback forms. But today we are here to talk about consumer duty. I think a very timely subject. Our friends at the FCA have been out and raised with the largest 20 firms what they are doing to demonstrate ongoing advice. The people on the panel here today are from firms who are really using technology to support that activity. So the areas we're going to be looking, particularly how can client portals help, monitoring portfolio reviews and rebalancing, and have a bit of the debate about do you collect assemble a collection of different systems, or are you looking for integration? We have some quite interesting differences. Actually, it's one of the things that comes out in our survey, that there are very conflicted views on that. As advisors do want everything joined up, but at the same time they want best of breed. I'm fairly sure we'll get into that at some point today. Right, moving on. I'm actually going to invite our speakers to introduce themselves, please, and talk about their backgrounds. Anya, would you like to kick us off?
Thanks very much, Ian. So hi everyone, I'm Anya Turvey, Operations Director for Salisbury House Wealth. Fairly new in role, been with the business for about 8 months, but been in financial services for over 12 years. I started off, in power planning and moved into operations because the only way to make the job easier for myself as a power planner back then, but then for the business, is to be able to leverage efficiencies, and most of that is driven through technology. The regulator will always change the legislation, that is one guarantee. And every time there are changes being made, that burden is being put on advice firms. It's not about us keep working harder. If we can work smarter to deliver on all of these things, and consumer duty is no exception, then we'll all be doing a great job and still be able to service our clients.
Brilliant. Thank you, Anya. And Mike?
Hi everyone. My name is Mike Hogg. I'm head of IT at Tavistock Investments. I've been in financial services for just over 30 years, I suppose, doing a range of roles from support to development and training, etc. I've been around kind of CRMs and research tools for about half of that period, I suppose, maybe a little bit more. And I'm really just kind of like looking at how we can help use technology to streamline processes and deliver better outcomes for our clients, which ultimately is what we're all about, I think.
Brilliant. Okay, so let me take my screen down so we can all see more of the people that are participating. I think the first issue we're going to come to talk about is the importance of tax planning in the context of demonstrating the value of ongoing advice. Anya, do you want to pick up with that one to begin with?
Yeah, so we've had a bit of a chat about this. And actually, when we're talking about representing fair price and volume and value as per Consumer Duty, it's really easy to have that conversation about how you're going to charge £5,000 fees or whatever that is. If you have been able to save client £10,000 plus in tax, I think if we're getting into conversations with clients just about investment performance, obviously timing of markets, depending on that conversation, could be more challenging. But we can't guarantee 40% returns on those, whereas we can with some of the tax incentives we can do. So just being able to represent value at outset for a client by adding in tax is really helpful. And I guess we do that throughout our entire journey with our clients. It's not a one hit, but it is really helpful to be able to attribute a number to it. I guess it's part of a bigger picture, because how can you attribute the number against that value in terms of the added value of a financial advisor? It's not just a monetary relationship. I've heard people talk about it being referred to as the fourth emergency service, the phone call that you make when there is a problem. And advisors are confidants and therapists, and you know, that shoulder scrape, that they are the first port of call for so many things. That's much harder to attribute value, whereas taxes is I guess a really good starting point.
Ian, you're muted, I think.
Self, yes. Do you want to add the Tavistock view on that one?
Yeah, so again, I think from our perspective, in terms of adding value, I mean, we talked before about the ability to service more clients and you know, having a streamlined process to do that, and having the technology to do some of the heavy lifting. I know we'll probably talk about that a little bit more further on in the conversation today. But again, if we can demonstrate that value by reducing our cost, you know, to the client, then again, it's servicing more clients for less cost and providing more value, I think is a key to technology use.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. I remember some years ago seeing a piece of all things, it was Excel, that a life company, I won't name them, had built, which is a wonderful piece of kit, actually, to explicitly look at, you know, tax optimization. And it did occur to me when I saw this, it's like, well, what's the first question that any client really asks at the beginning of the meeting? And is that first question a variation of how are we doing? And perhaps if you make the very first point that you know, in terms of how we're doing, yes, we think we've looked at it and we rebalanced it. You know, we're looking at all the options and we can save you X thousand in tax. That's a, you know, that's a really significant opening. As Anya says, what a perfect way to kick off the whatever your fees are, justifying value. And that's what our friends at the regulators are really focused on at the moment around Consumer Duty. I think it being able to bring that element in right early at the start of the discussion is a valuable one. That probably brings us, I think, quite neatly onto another active conversation about how we demonstrate ongoing advice, which is particularly around, do clients now expect a client portal? What is the role of a client portal? We've seen some interesting things released by various of the industry technology vendors of late. Dynamic Planner making a big push for something that I said I think is really important, which is to put a financial plan on every phone. You know, how many of our clients do not have a smart device in this day and age? They run their lives on them. If we want them to be as focused on their financial plan, it's interesting. If you look at it, something of the order, I think it's 76%. Jesse may come in and correct me in a minute with the exact number, but something certainly north of 76% of people with a smartphone use their bank's online banking services. So why would we not also want them to use their have their financial plan on their phone? And isn't that a great way of both demonstrating that the information that they want is there all the time, keeping them up to speed with their objectives and their progress towards their goals? You can track how often they log into a service like that, so you've got an ongoing demonstration of use by the client, and really just putting that financial plan on the place that they use most to manage their lives. Mike, can I come to you with your experience in that area? What's Tavistock thinking?
Yeah, so again, client portal has been something, certainly for me personally, that I've been trying to push advisors to use for many, many years. I think there are certain key features of a client portal, you know, certainly the richness of the integration with the back office system, if it's not held on the back office system. I think integration with various tools that can support the client with that. One of the main things, though, was around secure messaging and document sharing. You know, I found that was a real, you know, for me, regardless of whether the valuations are updating in the actual portal itself, you know, the ability to actually communicate securely is huge. And what's come to the fore recently is, you know, most advisors, I mean, we're finding advisors now communicating with clients through applications such as WhatsApp, which of course are on their mobile phones, the client's on the mobile phone as well. The idea of sitting in front of a laptop and using your client portal, I think while it exists now, I think lots of these client portals aren't available on a mobile phone. And I do think that is a hindrance. I also think having the advisors buy in to using the client portal is huge, because what I found in my experience is the blocker has been either the advisor doesn't understand the client portal well enough and doesn't have the confidence in going through it with their client, or they don't have trust or faith in the information that's held within the client portal. If your client portal is leading your back office system and the valuations aren't updating, for example, that might be a blocker. You know, if the plan information isn't correct or up to date, or, you know, there's certain client information which is not being kept up to date properly, that's also a blocker. So for me, data cleansing is massive in this space, making sure the information is correct, and obviously having it accessible both for the advisor on the mobile phone as well as for the client on the mobile phone. The back office systems that I've worked with don't actually have that portal available in their own application available on the mobile phone, whereas there are third-party portals which you can use, which will link into your back office system, which will. So I do think, you know, the ability to have that mobile access is key to it being successful. Because as you say, the banking apps are on the mobile phones, people can access the banking app anytime they like, and it should be the same for the client portal, really. For it to be successful and be widely up, have a wide uptake for it, I think that's a necessity.
I think, Anya, you made some point when we were doing the prep for this session about the importance of getting advisors to buy into the process. I mean, we certainly see it a lot where you'll get a reluctance to use a client portal, but that seems more driven by the individual advisor is not comfortable with the technology. The number of times that I've been told, oh, my wealthy clients don't use technology. And I'm sorry, if you look at all the surveys broadly across who are the early adopters of technology, guess what? It's wealthy people. And I think we must avoid the temptation to assume that it's only younger people. I know with IntelliFlow, with their personal finance portal, I think the oldest very regular user is 93. I'm sure Jane Hodges is on this call somewhere. I'm sure Jane would validate that she has an awful lot of clients. And a technique that Jane uses very well is part of her client onboarding is actually to take the client through the technology and make sure they fully understand it. There's also an important message for the firm as opposed to the advisor, the individual, if you're looking to reinforce your brand, if you've got the customer used to a service that your company is delivering via their mobile device, that's really demonstrating the brand and value of your organization. And that comes back to what we're at the heart of here, which is demonstrating the ongoing value that we deliver. Anya, do you want to take us a bit more through your specific experience in those areas?
Yeah, and I think you're right in terms of the advisor piece. So apologies to any advisors on the call. I appreciate there will be some that book the trend with this. COVID, as I was saying in the, you know, when we were chatting at the beginning, there's lots of very negative things, but it did move some of the technology forward quite a bit. And those clients, and we can probably all picture the ones that people are talking about, are the same clients that were doing the online shopping anyway. And definitely did their online food shopping COVID, and probably FaceTime their grandkids, and maybe even signed up to a club then did a weekly pub quiz sort of thing on some form of tech. It is a normal thing now in everyday, and there's always an exception, but we're not going to run the business by exceptions, and we'll deal with some of those exceptions. I know some firms have strong views on whether you deal with those or not, but actually, yeah, one of the barriers that I've seen is typically with advisors, and the representative of my client this, and you know, advisors are there to represent their clients within the firm. They are the voice of their clients, but it's important that we recognize the difference between a genuine client concern and an advisor on, you know, making that decision. Advisors using it is, I guess, a starting point, and a lot of the portals will let you either have test accounts or lock down your own so you can give it a good old go. And also thinking about what's the worst that can happen. I've had advisors that have been used to their paper pack and they almost hold it like a safety blanket. We remind them that as soon as it's printed, it's out of date anyway. It represents a snapshot in time. And just being able to talk about, well, what's the worst thing that happens? And if the worst thing that's going to happen is a client sees incorrect information, I worry, and a question I ask advisors is, would you prefer to just always have that incorrect information rather than have an opportunity to talk to a client about it and get a correct starting point? That usually opens up a bit of a conversation.